This is TWiT.
To say the problem of big tech sounds reductionist.
Well, okay, retaining long-term data retention has no good evidentiary basis, right? I mean, knowing that I clicked a link 10 years ago gives you nothing except for compromat, unless it's like you're hoping to sell me a roof and the link was to a link to replace my roof
30 years ago. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Now it's, yeah. You know, so the only reason to hold that is because hard drives are cheap and there's no statutory damages for breaches. So we know that like data that is collected tends to leak. We know that leaks have unquantifiable risks and that you should you know, have a policy of data minimization and retention minimization. But that policy is not operated by any of the firms. Quite the opposite happens, you know, or like whether people like being surveilled for advertising. We know they don't.
So I make a bill that requires data minimization. You can hold the data for 3 months, something like GDPR, actually. Isn't that kind of what GDPR, the California privacy?
There are elements of it, yeah, for sure.
So I make that bill. First of all, could we make a bill like that? Could we get it passed? And if we did, would that be sufficient to solve the problem of big tech?
No, it would be an iterative
like
step.
It's a little tiny thing. Yeah, look at what a GDPR. All I know is I get cookie announcements every 5 seconds.
We are going to have a enormous problem in the United States. The more that our homes produce data and devices produce data, and the more federated these privacy laws are. And I'll give you a clear example. So Walmart has a product that it's been researching. It is not in market, but it is a connected shopping cart. There's a patent that they've won.
Yeah,
basically, you put
it.
Your hands on the shopping cart. Yeah. You go into a store. It is looking for it takes a biometric baseline. And then as
Jesus
you shop throughout
Christ.
The store, checks for anomalies. So if your pulse is racing, you're sweating a little bit more, the shopping cart knows. The shopping cart pings a store associate to hopefully help you have a better time shopping throughout Walmart. There are some tangible use cases that might make sense if you understand how those data are being collected and mined and refined and what that ultimately means for you. However, the fact remains that a shopping cart may not be able to cross state lines. A shopping cart may be more scary and illegal than a bottle of alcohol. And the challenge is that there are myriad devices coming to market that do the same thing. And we just don't have a clear understanding of how those data can be collected, by whom, and for what purpose. And the EU has been debating this. I was at a couple of high-level meetings over the past 18 months or so, and there are lots of global leaders and organizations with enforcement powers who are trying to define data ownership. But again, this to me diverges from the great story about lead in the water and big alcohol and big, I guess, or tiny cannabis. The challenge is that when it comes to questions about technology, where we have to have conversations regarding data, and the people who are having those conversations they can't explain or understand what it is they're talking about. You know, that to me is fundamentally different from having conversations about lead in water or blood alcohol levels. I mean, you don't have to be a doctor to have a basic understanding of a toxin in your body.
I don't think we can
have a modicum of.
Yeah, we can't even identify what the toxin is very well in this big tech. I just feel like
I don't know. I think you guys have got that you're engaging in the sin of a subject that is not your, assuming that the subject that's not your discipline has relatively clear-cut lines and little debate within it. I guarantee you that within addiction research, there are enormous debates about what amount of alcohol is safe, what frequency of alcohol use is safe, what the danger signs are, and so on. These are, in fact, hotly contested issues all around, as is the question of, like, how much lead can be. I mean, there is going to be trace amounts of lead in your diet, right? That's a fact. So how much lead is too much lead, and what steps do we take, and what's the cost-benefit?
Can we agree here?
All of those are contestable.
Can we find a common ground, then, between the three of us on what we should do about big tech? I like data minimization. I think that's good. Oh, I know we agree.
I agree with Corey.
Let's get the framework.
What I'm saying is, my I think we need to project much further out into the future, because we do not tend to create policy or regulatory frameworks. NIST doesn't work on norms and standards. We don't have processes in place until there's a problem. And at that point, we're trying to fix or levy punitive. You know, it would be much better if there was a way to incent the different parties, which in this case are big tech, also the market, so investors, also everyday people and the government, to come together and collaborate. I know that sounds pretty naive, but I do think that I think that pursuing something that incents tech companies to put their work, to reframe their work as a public good, or at least a lot of that work, it doesn't lead to the loss of revenue necessarily, and it does allow us all to plan for the farther future, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, some of this is just corporate reform altogether. You know, Amy mentioned the fiduciary principle, which, you know, traces back to this Milton Friedman editorial. And the problem with the fiduciary rule for corporate governance is that it has no empirical benchmark, right? So, like, I could say it was my duty to put lead in the water of Flint because we only paid a $1 billion fine and we made $1 billion in profits, right? Or I could say it was my duty to engage in a string of predatory mergers without regard to what might happen in the future. Or I could say I had to exercise forbearance and not engage in any predatory mergers, lest 5 years down the line, this provokes so much anger among regulators that they broke up the company in a way that cost us more than we would have made, right? I had to hire that person because doing so created new efficiencies that could have led to new business. I had to lay that person off because the cost savings could go to my shareholders. There is no course of action that cannot be framed as beneficial to shareholders if you get to name the time frame and assign your own weights to hypotheticals. And so I think that the shareholder rule has always been a sociopath's charter, right? Just a thing that lets you do greedy things and insist that it's your legal responsibility to do them. And that a stakeholder rule, which is, you know, closer to like the German proposition, the stuff Varoufakis is pushing these days, is a lot closer, where at least what you say is, okay, well, there are competing priorities. There is no one empirical answer. We tend to rely on multi-stakeholderism as a way of resolving them, right? Rather than saying, okay, well, we'll just trust bosses to have their workers' best interests, we put the workers in the room too, so that at least they have to come up with a thing that where they can swing enough votes or find a compromise to govern the company in a way that accounts for both of their interests. So, you know, the stakeholder model has environmental regulators, consumers, workers, bosses, and investors all in the room, all with a seat at the table, all with what amounts to board votes. And it produces an outcome that at least gets a look in from other people's priorities. I don't think that it's necessarily good, but I think that is a necessary precondition for something being good, that you'll never get something that's good for all of those stakeholders if one of them doesn't get a seat at the table.